You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Wednesday, October 30th, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Becky Bond, political director of Credo, on the NSA surveillance, or I should say the USA Freedom Act, and on Senator Bernie Sanders' attempt to stop the cuts to Social Security being part of this grand bargain. Also on the program today, the heartwarming story of a Tea Party-dominated Republican House that supposedly doesn't kowtow to Wall Street, trying desperately to make it so that your financial advisors and brokers don't really have a fiduciary responsibility to you. I know. Also on the program today, my police commissioner went to Brown and he got booed off the stage, says Michael Bloomberg. And the sad story of Marco Rubio's getting his legs cut out from under him. Big win for the white Republican caucus. Also, in Seattle, socialist candidate may not win, but some of her issues may. And in Pittsburgh, earthquakers shut down a bunch of local branches of PNC to fight their subsidizing of mountaintop removal. All that and more. We got a lot more stories today. Also, great story about Atrios and how he is maybe, he has pushed the notion of expanding Social Security into the mainstream. And also, Ian Welsh over at ianwelsh.net has just a brief post up on why the progressive blog movement failed. And the comments are also fascinating. We'll talk about that later in the program as well. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Becky Bond.
Looking through.
Hey, listeners of the Majority Report, you've heard me talk about our sponsor for this month. I'm talking about Credo Mobile. They are a dream sponsor. It's one of those sponsors where their agenda aligns with the agenda of this program. That is to fight regressive policies, whether you're talking about fighting against Tea Party members of the House or fighting against weak-kneed Democrats. Credo Mobile donates a huge chunk, 1% of their revenues, to progressive nonprofits. They've given over $75 million since 1985 to places like the Rainforest Action Network, Democracy Now!, the ACLU. They've got 3 million activists who fight for things like Medicare and against the Keystone XL pipeline. Credo Mobile helps fuel this Credo action fights. You can join today. Go to credomobile.com/Sam, and you got a deal that runs only till October 31st. They'll give you $350, or up to $350, I should say, credit for switching over if your current provider charges you a fee. They'll also give you 25% discount on data for 2 years, and that's true unlimited data. So check it out now. Go to credomobile.com/Sam, or we got links on the homepage of majority.fm. Check it out today. Help sponsor this program. Help a sponsor that is fighting for the same things that you're fighting for. Do it now. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome Becky Bond. She's the political director of Credo Action. As you folks know, Credo Mobile is sponsoring the program this month. And the reason why Credo Mobile as a sponsor makes me so happy is because it funds what Becky Bond does over at Credo Action. Becky, welcome back to the program.
Well, Sam, it's so great to be on the program. This is one of the very few places where you're actually discussing what's happening in Washington, D.C., what's at stake, and what people can do. So we're thrilled to be sponsoring the program and to be talking to you today.
All right. So I want to first start off on I don't want to spend too much time on it because, you know, the other day I was convinced that I would never have to talk about the idea of Social Security being cut in any type of grand bargain after Harry Reid was very explicit on the topic. But it maybe moments after those words came out of my mouth, Gene Sperling, I think it was, President Obama's top economic advisor, was in, I don't know who he was speaking to, but he was basically coming out saying, look, Democrats are going to have to swallow cuts to Social Security and Medicare. So that plan went out the window. But I know that you guys are helping organize on this to pressure Dick Durbin and on behalf of Bernie Sanders. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, this is one of those situations where it's really the White House versus the rest of the country. And you know, Democrats and Republicans and independents down the line, the voters, they do not want to see these benefit programs cut. But people in Washington, D.C., when the White House says you're going to have to suck it up and vote for this, some Democrats believe that. And, you know, Sam, it takes two people for a lie to work, right? The person that says it and the person that believes it. And so Democrats will only have to vote for this bargain if they decide to vote for this bargain. So we're in the trenches fighting, and we've got a lot of help on our side. Senator Bernie Sanders from Vermont is on the budget committee, and he is really the conference committee, and he is really coming out slugging. And what's so exciting about Bernie Sanders and the new role he's taking in this fight is normally Sanders is out there making speeches on his own, but this time it's different. He's got groups from Social Security Works to Move On to Campaign for America's Future to DFA to Credo backing him up on this, and he has sent messages out to our members, getting them ready for a fight that he's going to lead, and I think over 500,000 people have signed up to help him convince Democrats to hold the line, so we're working on that. So there's good Democrats, and then there's wavering Democrats like Senator Dick Durbin, who really is a progressive champion. I mean, this is a guy who introduced the DREAM Act. I mean, he's a stand-up guy, but he's also very close to the president. And so our members have been calling him, specifically his constituents in Illinois, taking him to task over comments he made on Fox Sunday News, you know, saying that we've got to take a look at cutting these social programs. You know, he's very close to the president. We need to send a message to these Democrats in Washington, D.C., that that you know, they may be getting pressure from the White House, but the pressure they're going to feel from people in their districts, people in their states, and then also grassroots activists nationwide is going to be tremendous. And we need to make them more afraid of us than they are of the White House.
You know, I mean, I know this is all just speculation. I think we've even talked about this before, but I mean, this just seems to be a zombie desire coming out of this administration. I mean, it is just so frustrating that that we even have to have a conversation about the groups and the hundreds of thousands of people who are playing defense at this point against a Democratic administration.
And when you think of all the things that we could be fighting for that are in the president's agenda that we believe in, and we have to spend our time trying to stop them from cutting Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, for setting up major losses in the midterms if Republicans get to go out there and campaign on the fact that the Democrats cut your Social Security benefits, cut your Medicare benefits. I mean, it really defies logic, but there is this weird thing where there's this bubble in Washington, D.C., and it's a vicious system where people that, you know, when they're not in D.C., they can make a lot of sense. But when they get there, there's this bizarre logic that things are conventional wisdom that descends on this group of people that, you know, are kind of quite cut off from the sentiments of most people. And that's why it's our job to break through the bubble and make sure that we make so much noise that they can't possibly ignore us.
I mean, what do you think? I mean, my theory has been that just, you know, when we look at back on the way that the mainstream media, the conventional wisdom looks back on things like Bill Clinton's welfare reform, which I think, you know, from a policy perspective, if you talk to people who work in that policy arena, has been a real disaster, particularly in the wake of the recession. But it still gets much acclaim, and I guess I'm just convinced that the White House just looks on this as a one of the things they need to check off for their legacy bucket list.
You know, it's a weird thing, and I think a lot of people, you know, don't know what the president is really thinking. I think that he said that he believes he's playing the long game, and that, you know, people like us don't know what we're talking about, and that he thinks if he can cut a deal to raise revenues and trim entitlement benefits, then that's a win in the long term. But what we know is that, first of all, the Republicans have effectively blocked any real movement on the revenue front, raising taxes, closing major corporate tax loopholes, and so we face getting into a negotiation where the White House, you know, strikes a deal that actually, you know, doesn't have the massive revenue increases that we need for the government, but does give in on even if they're small adjustments. Once we break the line of allowing cuts to benefits from Medicare and Social Security, then once we go across that line, it's a bright line. Once we go across that bright line, then they're going to be cut. It's going to be a death of 1,000 cuts, and they're going to be 1,000 tiny cuts, and we're going to bleed that dry, and then we're going to have We're going to have old people in destitute poverty, and we're going to have more people who can't get medical care at growing expense to society. It's really we're at this tipping point, and whatever the president and the White House, you know, they think that is that they can strike as a historic deal. We know from negotiations in the past that they're not likely to strike a good deal, and that we think that they should just, you know, have their hands off these benefits and go work on other parts of their agenda.
And frankly, you know, I mean, at this point in where we are in the economy, I don't know what amount of taxes raised would justify cuts to these programs, frankly. I mean, I mean, aside from the idea that loopholes can be opened back up as quickly as they're shut, which I think we learned after the Reagan tax reform of, I guess it was 86, if I'm thinking right. And but, you know, at this point, I mean, I have no problem with the idea of putting in raised revenues in there as some type of poison pill, which we know will sink the any type of bargain. But frankly, I mean, if they want to deal with, I don't know, if they want to lift the cap on Social Security, I guess, the cutoff on taxes there, I think that wouldn't hurt at all. But beyond that, I don't know. I just see the revenue as, on one hand, functioning as a poison pill, which I like. On the other hand, it's used as a fig leaf, as a way of just being able to walk out of this these 8 years and say, we did what no Democratic president could do. We cut Social Security, and sadly they're under the belief, and I think it's, I don't know if it's right or wrong, that would be hailed historically, but
what no Republican president could do, right?
Indeed.
So, you know, you have billionaires like Pete Peterson that have somehow, you know, run, you know, multi-million-dollar campaigns to convince the American people that Social Security is in trouble, and we know Social Security is not going broke. We have a surplus. It is, you know, we've got enough to pay benefits out for the next 20 years. If with immigration reform, Social Security, and we bring these workers out of the shadows and have them paying into Social Security, we'll be in even better shape. And so, you know, I don't understand why we're wasting our time working on this when there are other parts of the agenda, like dealing with climate change, dealing with immigration reform that we desperately need, that we're playing defense on these programs. But, you know, we'll do what we have to do. And if we have to save Democrats from themselves on this issue, that's what we're going to do. And luckily, we have great partners in the Republicans who are so recalcitrant that even if Democrats give them 95% of what they want, they won't agree to the deal without that last 5%. So the radical Republicans may be our best partners in this fight, because they'll stick it out for such a great deal, 100% of their agenda, that that even maybe the White House will not be able to come to an agreement to cut these programs.
Indeed. Well, all right, let's move on to I had mentioned that these two bills that are winding their way through the Senate and the House right now in response to the ongoing revelations of the NSA surveillance. One is coming from Senator Leahy and Representative Sensenbrenner in the House, and the other is being, floated by Dianne Feinstein. Tell us about these two bills and why you guys are supporting Leahy and Sensenbrenner's bill.
Okay, well, so this is something which is of just particular import to us, as not only are we a social change organization that fights for Fourth and First Amendment rights, but, you know, we're also a telecom carrier. And so the revelations that the NSA was not only conducting widespread warrantless wiretapping, which we knew through abuse of national security letters that come with a gag order, that, you know, request private information about U.S. citizens without any court order, or allowing a telephone company or an internet company to even say that this information had been requested by the government. Very, very few ways to fight back. That there, now we find out with the Snowden revelations that the NSA is just sucking up all of virtually every phone record of every American suspected of no wrongdoing at all. And so there's actually three things that are happening right now. The first is not being talked about very much because it has very little chance of movement in the near future. But Rush Holt has a bill called the it's to repeal the surveillance
state repeal act.
The Surveillance State Repeal Act, and this would repeal the Patriot Act and then also the FISA Amendments Act that has led to all this warrantless wiretapping. So I think it's important to say that the person that's actually leading on this is Rush Holt. But now there's a very interesting dynamic coming out of the Senate where you have Sensenbrenner, who was one of the original authors of the Patriot Act, joining with Senator Leahy, the chair of the Judiciary Committee of the Senate, and they have a bill, the Leahy-Sensenbrenner Act, which would end the bulk collection of Americans' phone records and would also add a small modicum of transparency where national security letters are concerned, in which it would allow companies that receive national security letter, which are unconstitutional requests that do not come with court order, that receive these requests to report on a quarterly basis roughly how many of these requests they received. Nothing about them, but, you know, sort of round it to the nearest 100 so that we could start to get an idea of the extent of how many of these unconstitutional requests the government
because as it stands
is pushing
now,
on internet providers.
As it stands now, when you get one of these letters, you are barred from actually saying that you got one of these letters.
Yeah, so if a company, you know, receives a national security letter that doesn't come with a court order and they want to question it, they can't say anything, right? No company can say whether they have or have not received a national security letter, and that comes with a gag order. Now, this gag order has been declared unconstitutional in federal district court, and it's moving, the government is appealing, it's moving to the federal appellate level, but it doesn't stop the practice. So currently, the government can just send a letter saying hand over these records, and you can't tell anyone, and there's no judicial review court order. I mean, it is clearly unconstitutional, and then we don't even know the extent to how many of these are happening. So the security state has really been growing expansively, and I think with the Snowden revelations, it really hit home for a lot of Americans, because not only was this happening to some kind of unknown number of Americans who were getting their records through national security letters, but like everyone's phone records are being collected. So the great thing about this Leahy-Sensenbrenner bill is that if we can get this passed, it would end that bulk collection. But it doesn't do anything about the current status quo with these unconstitutional national security letters and the general level of NSA abuse that we knew about before the Snowden revelations. Now, it's really important, though, and we're endorsing this even though it's you can't even call it a half measure because it's such a small step, but an important one because, you know, since September 11th, we haven't been able to push any reform of the anti-constitutional surveillance measures that passed. And we learned with the report that, you know, we're tapping Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany's phone, and the President didn't even know about it. So it's clear that the NSA has gone rogue. This would stop one of the worst abuses that we know of, right? The Leahy-Sensenbrenner bill. The danger is that Senator Dianne Feinstein, who's a senator, Democratic senator from California, who's incredibly conservative on these issues and has opposed any kind of oversight of the NSA since these revelations come out. And in fact, her committee has just simply not done its job of investigating or providing oversight. And she has, I mean, basically what we see is a sham bill that purports to rein in the NSA and stop them from tapping the phone of other world leaders. And it's going to compete with this real reform bill. So it's really important. We're trying to get the word out that we need to pass the Leahy-Sensenbrenner bill. I mean, this bill in the House is supported by one of the authors of the Patriot Act. But we also need to make sure that Senator Feinstein isn't able to avoid real reform by putting out a sham bill that really is going to do nothing to limit the abuses of the NSA.
Do you worry, I mean, just based upon your experience with these type of sort of legislative strategies, do you worry that the passage of the Leahy-Sensenbrenner bill will foreclose an opportunity to move on Rush Holt's Surveillance State Repeal Act? I mean, in other words, and you've said that, you know, you perceive this as almost a half measure. I mean, do you worry that almost half measures end up sort of letting the air out of the tires, as it were?
So this is such a great strategy question, and it's one that we discuss here at Credo all the time. On a lot of issues, you know, we really represent we really represent the left flank, and I think back to our fight over the public option for health care, and I think that if Credo had argued for universal health care, you know, instead of arguing for the public option, when the time came to compromise, we might have gotten the public option. And since then, we've really focused on, do we support bills that only get part of the work done, right? Because once they pass, then often things are over.
Right.
I think the chances of the federal government taking any real steps to rein in the unconstitutional spying of the NSA is virtually zero, and that the only way we're going to stop this is through the courts, and there are a number of cases moving through the courts. And so for us, the real strategy on this is making sure that the president, you know, appoints all the open seats on the judiciary with, you know, fair-minded constitutional scholars, you know, who understand the issues and who will protect the Fourth and First Amendments. So the only real way to roll back the worst abuses is going to be through the courts. That's what we think is going to happen. Now, does that mean we quit fighting? No. And so that's why we support Rush Holt's Act, and I think it's important for Congress to face this and be on the record on a regular basis. Now, this massive collection of innocent Americans' phone records that's happening on a daily basis, I think this is so egregious that it's worth, if there is, because of a perfect storm of what's happened, the White House has turned against the NSA because of the debacle around Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, and if there is a moment where it's possible to roll back this one terrible thing, we think it's important to do that. But we also think it's important to be clear that this is only stopping one of the worst abuses that we know about, right? That we know about. So this is a hard decision, and you ask a great question, and it's a question, you know, that I'm sure that your listeners struggle with too, which is what is it that we want to ask for, how do we want to ask for it, and how do we want to hold our members accountable? And we need people, you know, we need some civil libertarians to oppose this bill, the Leahy censorship bill, because it's not strong enough. But for those of us, I mean, as a phone company who feels responsible for the privacy of our members, we can't protect them from the NSA, you know, scooping up and collecting all of their phone records. We can't do that as a phone company. But as advocates, we feel a special responsibility that there's a chance that there's a moment in Congress where it's possible to solve this one problem, this one heinous abuse of our rights, then we feel like we need to do everything we can to pass that.
And I know you got to go in just a minute or two, but and presumably if on a quarterly basis you're able to put out, we've received X number of national security letters, that may provide more fodder for any type of political response to this, right? I mean, because right now we're just in the dark. People, I would imagine that when people presume how many of these national security letters go out, they would assume it's less than it is.
Right. I mean, the fact is we don't know, right? And we know that, you know, James Clapper has essentially lied when talking about programs before. We don't have any idea what's going on. But the idea that it's a sad state of where we are in terms of our civil liberties, that it would be a big win for companies to be able to say to the nearest hundredth how many of these requests that they had received and not be able to say anything else or risk go to jail. Right, you know, you can't say whether you have right now. You can't say whether you have or have not received a national security letter. And if you say if you do, then you can go to jail. Right? I mean, this is where our security state is right now, and we need big change, and we need to support groups like the Electronic Frontier Foundation and the ACLU and Center for Constitutional Rights that are fighting us out in the courts. They're the real heroes here. They're the ones that are going to protect our rights, and we're, you know, at Credo, one of the things that we do with our members' phone bills is that we support those groups. And in particular, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, they are just fierce watchdogs of our civil liberties, particularly making sure that the Bill of Rights applies online and on our phones and in the digital spaces. And we, you know, we're very proud to support them because they're doing incredible work that no one else is doing right now that Congress won't do. And that's why it's important that people like you and me and that Credo members and people that listen to your podcast is that we we fight for issues and not particularly to just elect Democrats.
Yes.
Because, you know, Congress a lot of times and Democrats, they're part of the problem. They're not part of the solution. And so we're doing everything we can through giving money, through being activists, through supporting shows like yours to be part of the solution and fight these really important fights.
Becky Bond, political director from Credo Action, thanks so much for your time today. Always a pleasure.
Oh, a pleasure, Sam. Thanks.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back, and when we do, I'm going to be talking about what's going on in Seattle and also this brief post by Ian Walsh. I think it's an interesting post. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a moment.
When she was just 5 years old, there was nothing happening at all. Every time she puts on a radio, there was nothing going down at all. Not at all. Then one fine morning, she puts on a New York station. You know, she don't believe what she heard at all. She started shaking to that fine, fine music. You know, her life saved by rock and roll. Despite all the amputations, you know you could just go out and dance to the rock and roll station. It was all right.
It's all right.
Hey, baby, you know it was all right.
It's all right.
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Just wanted to pick up on that conversation with Becky Bond just a little bit about, as you know, it's been widely reported that the NSA is not only spying on the leaders of at least 35, 36 countries, also the UN, and it's also been spying on millions of citizens of countries like Spain or France. And yesterday, the National Security Director, General Keith Alexander, in testifying to the House Intelligence Committee, claims that the reports that his agency swept up millions of phone records of European citizens was completely false. And he revealed that data collected by NATO allies were shared with the United States. This is not information we collected on European citizens, Alexander told the House Intelligence Committee. It represents information that we and our NATO allies have collected in defense of our countries and in support of our military operations. Now, first off, I know many of you are cynical, but do you really think that the head of the National Security Agency or the Director of National Intelligence, anyone like that, would actually go in front of the House Committee and lie? It's almost impossible to imagine. Now, I understand Senate committees. Yes. Now, of course, they would go in front of a Senate committee and lie. But do you really think they would do it in front of the House committee? Why are you so cynical?
There are just too many consequences for them
something
like that.
I mean, can you imagine the outrage that people would have if, say, you know, some national security surveillance leader in the U.S. government went in front of a lawmaker and in open testimony lied?
It's almost impossible to imagine. You're just getting into really paranoid, deranged territory there.
This is completely hypothetical. Not only that, to be fair, he may not have been lying here. Because I repeat, his information is, this is not information we collected on European citizens. It represents information that we and our NATO allies have collected in defense of our countries in support of military operations. So there you have it. It's obviously not information that we collected. It's information that we and our NATO allies collected. And it wasn't on European citizens. It was in defense of our countries and in support of our military operations.
Cleared up for you?
Oh, yeah. Any more questions? I didn't think so.
That was the mic drop moment for the hearing.
You wouldn't ever say that we would lie. Unbelievable. It's such a joke. I don't even know why they take testimony from these guys anymore. Seriously. They should be barred from testifying. Please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear to tell us the truth? Just kidding. Come on, just let's get this over with. We all are here just to take our pictures. So really interesting thing happening in Seattle. I think we've mentioned on the better half of the program, Chem Champion, I think, may have first pointed this out to us. But a woman running for city council under the Socialist Alternative banner. Her name is Kashama Sawant. And the election obviously is taking place, I guess, now in about a week. She's not necessarily going to win, but there was a piece in the Seattle Times on how she has managed to push the conversation far to the left than what has been normally what we normally see in a general election for the mayorship, the mayorality, I guess, in Seattle. Against coal trains, check. For universal preschool, check. For more transit, bike lanes, and compassion for panhandlers, triple check. These are planks of Sawant, but they have been adopted by the incumbent Mayor Mike McGinn and his challenger, State Senator Ed Murray. Danny Westneat writes, on issues where they haven't adopted her precise platform, such as levying an income tax on millionaires, they actually wish they could, but the city can't legally impose an income-based tax. On other issues, they have begun out-socialisting the socialist. For example, the $15 an hour minimum wage. McGinn says, as the incumbent, I'd go even higher. If the council proposed a higher number, I'd support that, McGinn declared this month. Westneat writes, something definitely is different. Typical candidates here go hard left for the primary, then tack back ever so slightly toward the reasonable center for the general election. This is the route McGinn traveled to win in 2009. But this year, the candidates keep coming up with new ways to out-liberally the other. About the only socialist ground Sawant has left all to herself is her plan for rent control and unionizing Amazon. So either these politicians are widely misreading the public or something is happening here. Now this is Seattle. Just like New York is New York. And it remains to be seen what any of these politicians who win are going to implement. And it remains to be seen what Bill de Blasio, if he can squeak by the cat killer in New York, will implement.
Nice callback.
Oh, thanks.
The cat killer.
Yeah. But the bottom line is that if the bluest of blue cities is not moving hard to the left, you're not going to see it anywhere else in the country. And I'm not suggesting that Bill de Blasio is a move to the hard left, but he is a move at least to the left, if even only in its rhetoric and what it takes to get him elected. I mean, we saw this obviously with President Obama doing this in the run-up to the 2012 election. And so this is, I don't know, somewhat a somewhat encouraging. But it leads to a post that I teased before by Ian Welsh over at ianwelsh.net, who was, I think it was Open Left that he was involved with back in the day. It wasn't Open Left. It was, I can't remember the name of the blog now. It escapes me. But nevertheless, Ian Welsh, I'm not sure why he wrote this post now, but he writes, in the early 2000s, progressive blogging seemed like a big deal. At the first yearly cause, as it was called then, big-name politicians came and kicked our ass. We were covered by major newspapers and TV outlets, etc. Today, we are nothing. The reason is simple. We could not elect enough of our people. We could not instill sufficient fear. We could not defeat incumbents. We did not produce juice. Clark and Dean didn't win the 2004 presidential nomination. Dean was taken out in particularly nasty fashion. He goes on to point out that Joe Lieberman won his general election, although he was he lost his primary. He goes on to say the nail in the coffin was the 2008 primaries and compares this to the Tea Party's ability to primary incumbent senators and House members, sometimes going on to win, sometimes not going on to win. But nevertheless, they have instilled fear. And I think it was the Agonist that Welsh was at. But nevertheless, and there was a comment also in the comment section by Jerome Armstrong, who was involved in the Blanche Lincoln, Bill Halter, I believe it was, race back in 2010. And he basically marks that as the point where bookends that Lieberman fight in the primary, as that was the 2010, the failure of both unions and Netroots and a progressive win taking out Blanche Lincoln in Arkansas was really the end of that juice. Now, I think there's a lot of truth to this. We have seen the PCCC attempt to win in the primaries, and sometimes they've been successful to a certain extent, other times not so much. But I think at the end of the day, this is one of the biggest failures of the progressive left. Now, there's a lot of reasons for that, and I would put money as a top of that list, frankly. That makes a big, big difference. Nevertheless, and there's other reasons too. I mean, I think there is a hyper-partisanship on the left, loosely called the left, that is problematic towards those goals. I think you have an infrastructure amongst the Democrats that is, they're the establishment Democrats who control that infrastructure. The DCCC is probably more to the right relative to their caucus in general than any disparity within the Republican campaign committees. I don't know what the answer is there, but you know, maybe there's a model in Seattle. I mean, I think, you know, to a certain extent, this stuff has to happen much on a much more local level and has to bubble up. I mean, the Tea Party, one of the things that they also have effectively done, whether you want to call them the Tea Party or you want to call them the fundamentalist right, they have taken over a lot of the local infrastructure of the Republican Party. Local and state infrastructure has been taken over by those people, and that's where money has a less of a role to play. It is under the radar, and so I don't know. I just wanted to mention it. I thought it was interesting. And meanwhile, you know, we still have direct action. A listener wanted to make me sure to let me know this Earthquakers. The Earthquake Action Team, about a week and a half ago in Pittsburgh, they pulled off what is considered the biggest bank branch action in history. They hit multiple PNC bank branches in Pittsburgh, 15 bank branches. There were 14 silent occupations, 7 arrests, over 100 participants. I think many of them also, they did this on the final day of power shift. This was all basically to protest PNC Bank's financing of mountaintop removal coal mining, which is just a devastating practice. I can't remember the name of that film, that documentary, but we should put a link to that as well. So on the blog at majority.fm, we're going to have a lot of links to the stuff that Credo Action is up to. We will link to this piece by Ian Welsh. It's worth going over there, particularly to read the comments as well. And we'll also put a link to the mountaintop removal. Bob Kincaid has a great site on that. All right, folks, we're going to head into the better half of the program, where we will tell you the heartwarming story of the New York City police commissioner being booed at Brown. And some interesting sound from the congressional hearing on the Affordable Care Act. I was on All In last night. I forgot to send out a push notification. I'm sorry, app users. I know, my bad.
Maybe that's something that I can do every now and then if you would give me the push notification.
No, I'm not sure I'm going to give you the keys to the push
notification. Oh, okay.
You know what happens when you give one of these young kids the keys to the Mercedes.
Matt and Mike never gets the push notifications because you clearly don't listen to the show.
I don't know if you saw Ferris Bueller's Day Off, but I'm not letting that happen to my fancy car. No way. I'm going to come back and find that thing on the off the side of a cliff because you tried to roll back the odometer. That's just not happening to me, buddy.
Just like I destroyed the Majority FM Twitter account by reaching over 10,000 followers. Just like I destroyed the Facebook page by reaching over 6,000 Facebook
I hope people are liking us on Facebook and doing that type of stuff.
That was so weak.
I know, so weak. But I went on Chris Hayes last night, and it was basically just he and I going back and forth. But there are some important things to talk about in terms of, A, President Obama's, I mean, I think it's, you know, I don't know if I would call it a lie, what President Obama said, but it sure looks like it. And I don't, I mean, I, you know, look, the administration was putting, we'll talk more about this in the better half, about this idea of what's going on in the exchanges. All that said, understand that there are millions more people who are being denied health care coverage by Republican governors, millions more than those who are having to get booted off of their individual plan, health insurance plan, possibly paying more. In most cases, not. Possibly paying more for a better product. Then, I mean, the numbers are just stunning. So to a large extent, this is overblown, which is not to say that this isn't, you know, this is not I'm not an apologist for the Affordable Care Act. I mean, at the time, I was agitating against it in many respects. And I'm not even convinced that this is going to work long term. My hope is that it leads to a single payer system. I don't know that it was any, I don't think it's going to be any worse, frankly. And I think in a large respects, it's going to be better than what we had. I mean, that even, I mean, obviously it's a slam dunk when you talk about expanding Medicaid. But I think we're going to see less medical bankruptcies or personal bankruptcies as a function of medical problems. And that makes up 50% of all bankruptcies. I think it's going to contain costs slightly in the long run. But it is sort of fascinating to see how the Republicans are getting away with feigning concern for people's health insurance. All right, we got to take a break. We'll head into the better half. I want to remind you that you have 36 hours, actually, almost to the hour, 35 hours to get in on this deal that we have for Credo Mobile. We will not have a deal, a special deal, I believe, to offer next month. Right now, if you go to credomobile.com/Sam, you will get up to $350 credit on your Credo bill towards paying off any change fees. You will also get 25% off of data for 2 years. That's unlimited data. I've told you in the past that Credo Mobile supports Credo Action, and on top of that, gives 1% of its revenue directly to progressive nonprofits. So on one hand, it finances Credo Action, which takes which pushes both Democrats and Republicans to more progressive policy positions, and it also contributes directly to progressive nonprofits. So you got 36 hours to do that. You can go to the blog at majority.fm, click on the link. Also, you can support this program by going to majority.fm, clicking on the Amazon link. If you buy crap through Amazon, buy it through our link. There's no excuse. You will see no difference. We get a kickback. Not huge, but it adds up, folks. It adds up. Also, the best way to support this program is to become a member today. 35 cents a day isn't just the first 40 some odd minutes, with today 52 minutes, worth 35 cents a day. That's, you're paying less than a penny per minute. So become a member today at majority.fm. Not only will you be supporting the first 40 minutes, but you'll also be you'll have access to the better half of the program, which is fun, fun, fun.
It was probably a good time to tease a story about, I'm guessing, gutting the social safety net.
Right.
A really wonky story about.
Right. Well, I got a fun story about how the House. Actually, this is actually not depressing. Only 30 Democrats voted with the Republicans in the House to basically gut a provision of Dodd-Frank, which is literally so, the provision is so, it's so common sense. It is actually funny that they would even attempt to delay it. We'll take a break. We'll talk about it when we come back. 646-257-3920 is the number. You can IM me at Majority FM. 646-257-3920. We will take your phone calls. We'll be back in just a moment.